In the world of business help and personal development, there's a lot of soft, fuzzy stuff that gets consumed like candy, right? It's the quick sugar rush. And I'm not going to disparage anybody that is creating that stuff because I think their intentions are good. And I think they are creating useful stuff for the world. But it's not significant, in my opinion, of helping businesses solve this stuff. And I realize that's the hurdle I get to overcome with this message and with this framework is how do I promote it in a way that makes it more visible, but without watering it down and making it the new shiny that everybody gets excited about, but fails to follow through on.
You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Today's episode of Hooked on Startups, I am beyond delighted to be joined by Joshua Long. Joshua, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Matthew. Happy to be here.
So I'm going to read out my summary of Joshua Long that I invented earlier. So Joshua, you are an entrepreneur, you are a strategy and sales guru, and a consultant who focuses on helping businesses break through their current revenue plateaus and unlock rapid growth. You launched bottleneckbreakthrough.com, which focuses on unlocking sustainable growth for businesses. And you're the author of Bottleneck Breakthrough, which is a book that you've recently published, which teaches businesses how to implement your bottleneck breakthrough method. Does that sound anything like you at all?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I appreciate it.
It's a skill I have, actually. It's a combination of stealing from various different places and putting it in together to make it sound completely unintelligible to anybody.
Right. I always like some of the other intros that people write of themselves and the perspectives and their history and all the awards. And it's like, well, okay, great. Now what?
That's the thing. What's the saying? The older I get, the better I was. So I think it's one of these things is if you have to sort of look back on all these things, I'm slightly embarrassed. If I go back and think of all of those accolades that I just missed, you know, I was there. But so is looking backwards a real problem for businesses, you think?
Yeah, I think it's a personality thing. There are certain personality types that romanticize the past that definitely live off of their laurels and their accolades of the past and try to rehash them. I've seen a couple companies over the years that had done well in a certain decade or certain window of growth and couldn't repeat it. And so they kept looking back to try to use that success to be more relevant today. But I really think it's more of a personality type. There's non-business owners that romanticize the past. And I think that staying relevant and staying current, and that's one of the things I talk about in the book, is zero-based thinking. It ties in with the psychology practice of existentialism that I really liked in undergrad that discards the past. It says, from today forward, what do we want? And so I think that's difficult for a number of business owners to face because It's they may be overcoming hurdles now. They may be licking their wounds, coming back from a failure in a declining market, not wanting to face the music. And so I could see how paying attention to their past is a habit.
I mean, and in your book, you have a system. You talk about sort of six key parts of the process. You talk about the mindset and strategy and vision. Can we talk about mindset to start with?
So it's funny. I think that's the most important part of actually any part of life is getting your head trash cleared out. The problem is in the book, I put it last because less than half of my clients want to face that first. It's kind of like, well, let's get some other successes. Let's get a bunch of things cleaned up. And then when there are no other bottlenecks other than the stuff going on between my ears, then we'll tackle it. Or we'll just stop working together, because I think it is the ultimate bottleneck.
And do you find that you've got, I mean, we'll go into depth in a few minutes in terms of what the process is, but do you find that you almost have to try and establish your credentials with a few quick wins?
That's it. I mean, I think that's the name of the game for all consultants, advisors, is unless you have such celebrity that you can get buy-in for months and years on end without significant results. At the end of the day, all advisors, all professionals are on a short leash. They have to prove their merit day in and day out.
Which is ironic, really, because in my opinion, and myself included, many, many business owners are actually not qualified at the outset to run businesses.
Right. That's a really good perspective. I think we learn as we go from the school of hard.
Exactly. So in other words, where you want to be, you do learn on the job. So, but if you look at your credentials from the outset as a business owner, in many cases, they're severely lacking.
I mean, when I got out of undergrad with an MBA and started a mortgage brokerage, actually started a software venture that failed to launch and then started a mortgage brokerage, I knew less than nothing at those points. And so,
but you have the ability. So the great thing that, you know, VCs, as a great example, invest in teams. Mm-hmm. It's not about the company necessarily. It's not about the idea. Mm-hmm. It's about the ability of the team to pivot if necessary and to react to circumstances. So my point here really is that if you're a business owner, and we're talking about sort of businesses in the wheelhouse of sort of 1 to 10 million a year mm-hmm. turnover, do you find it the hardest thing for them to deal with is the appreciation that they've actually reached some sort of ceiling where they can't see beyond that?
Oh, all the time. I mean, there are countless cases, I'm sure you've talked to them as well, where they are in a rising tide, they get a few things right, they get to a couple $1 million in revenue, and they think they have the world by the tail, right? And so it's not, in those cases, it's not until they've been stuck there for a while that then they start looking around and saying, oh, maybe I don't have this all figured out.
Yeah.
And that's, it takes awareness. I mean, I think all of my clients talk about it. And in the foreword of the book, one of my past clients talks about that the process we went through was more up here for him and being willing to challenge assumptions, even if they're not mindset limitations for him. It was challenge assumptions about how the business is supposed to run or could run to be more effective. And for him, that was what the bottleneck breakthrough method unlocked.
And I think that for me is one of the biggest bottlenecks, I think, certainly of all of the businesses that I've sort of meet and talk to. And in fact, any business that I run as well is actually realizing that you're beginning to run out of talent.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. And that's such a counterintuitive thought process, because entrepreneurs figure everything out on their own. They bootstrap oftentimes and have to figure it out to survive. And then they get to a point where they have to then say, no, I need other talent. It doesn't have to be a consultant like me. It's just relying on staff, relying on some advisor, something external, read a book. I mean, take outside input to get past where you're at. And I think that is a big shift for a lot of business owners.
And I see this. I mean, I remember in particular, there was some guy on LinkedIn was having a rant. Mm. He was talking about these consultants and these that, and I'm the one who knows how to run my business. I've done this and I've done it this way and it's worked. Right. So how can anybody come in and tell me how to run my business?
Right.
Who knows how to run my business better than I do? And that to me was like this huge cry for help. It
seemed, right. It's a classic sociopathic cry that pushes so many people away, but those that can see through it realize that person needs help.
And
on LinkedIn, that reminds me, Reid Hoffman, founder of LinkedIn, and his old Stanford buddy, Peter Thiel, who's now a venture capitalist. I read an interview or conversation of the two of them years ago, and it was really surprising. They started down this path of what percentage of small business owners or business owners in general are sociopaths by nature, meaning they look to themselves, the world revolves around them, they are the smartest, best ideas, most attractive people in the world. And I was new in my career. And so I was very curious what these guys had to say, because I had dealt with some frustrating clients over the years. And they, I don't remember who said what, but one of them said, I think it's like 30 to 40%. And the other one said, no, it's half. And so I think that's the challenge, is when you're the lone ranger to start with, and you're saving everything, you're fixing everything, you know everything, you do know every part of your business for the most part, more intimately than anybody from the outside, then to shift, like I said, to that perspective of, okay, I'm open, and now you need to vet people and you need to be discerning. But that was really insightful for those two guys to say that. And it fit with my experience too.
And do you think the perspective is one of the key attributes that you bring to businesses?
Yeah, this is going to sound arrogant, but I didn't know that the way I saw things was a unique ability early on in my career. I just thought it was common sense that people could see this stuff, connect the dots, really be able to create order out of chaos, disconnect disparate data points, and make sense of it. And I realized early on, working with another consultant, Chet Holmes, that he started relying on me for all the strategy for our clients to connect the dots and run alongside him. And I realized that was a gift that I had, because I was younger than all the other consultants by about 15 years in that team. So I think that's definitely something unique. And I'm not the only person with it, but it's rare.
No, you're right, because it's the ability to see something in a holistic way. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about that ability is that you don't need to have specific technical knowledge of a company or a product.
No, I mean, that's the funny thing is, at the end of the day, all business is the same. I mean, it comes down to three main components in any given business. They're not always the same exact components, but just about every business runs around three main key factors, whether it's getting clients, converting clients, fulfilling clients, or the fulfillment software IP behind it.
Yeah. And I've noticed also that the businesses that you work with are established businesses generally. What do you find different between, do you work with many startup businesses, or do you just work with established businesses?
You know, I used to work with a lot of startups, and this is very self-serving for me, is that startups, there's an endless amount of need and things unfinished that they're always teetering on this point of insolvency, the wheels falling off, whatever. And so I joke that startups are 10 times the work for 1/10 the pay.
Yes.
As a consultant. And so that's one reason I work with more established businesses. The other reason is that more established businesses have a lot of inefficiencies just laying around. So it's really easy to walk in, tune something up, and get a big outcome. So it's self-serving. Startups are just hard by nature.
And you're right. So the outcome, again, I think a critical word, outcome, which is, I think, something that people tend to forget. So as you run a business, what happens is you become in love with running the business. You know, that is your life. We're doing it this way because it's the way that it's always been done and it works. But how important is it for you to be able to talk to your clients and describe outcomes? And one of the outcomes that you talk about is your ability to double their revenues, or to provide immediate, tangible, measurable results. And it sounds like something that's a sales pitch, but clearly it's not. And I know it's not, because knowing the sort of businesses that I've worked with, there are normally huge holes that you
forget. Oh, yeah. You don't see. Inefficiencies in every system, right? And so talking about outcomes, and so we started about mindset and dealing with limiting beliefs. And so that's the last chapter. The section before that is vision, because if you don't know where you're going, it doesn't matter what plans you make. It's that Alice in Wonderland conversation with the Cheshire Cat when she's lost. And so to me, there's only three reasons to start a business: to grow it, to sell it, to grow it, to cash cow it, cash flow it, or to grow it, to pass it on to your kids. And everything else is a job. if you're not directing towards one of those outcomes. And at the end of the day, we all want time freedom. That's everybody's goal. And the way you get time freedom is to have enough cash flow. So selling it gives you a pile of cash to put into some long-term assets. Cash cowing it is a shortcut to that cash flow. And then passing it on to your kids means that you've taken enough out of it to have long-term financial needs met. And so talking with my clients, I don't necessarily start every client engagement with what's your ultimate objective and how far away are you? And assessing that, I'm doing it more and more because I want to help accelerate that end goal. But with the objectives of what bottleneck are we fixing and why are we fixing it? What's the outcome that's going to be delivered or created, or the ripple effect that's going to either create more freedom or more problems if we implement this? So
yeah, I think it's funny because I think that the mindset thing, actually trying to figure out why you're doing this, is the most important thing. Whether it's because any business, you can have an early initial success because you come up with a good idea, but then if you run out of vision, or it's not talent, it's because trying to figure out who you are as a person and why you're doing this.
Oh, right. Well, all businesses stop because the owner doesn't stop growing because the owner doesn't want to deal with their own internal stuff, which trickles down to they don't communicate and they don't lead and they don't manage.
And I think it's like any relationship almost, isn't it?
Oh, right. I mean, everything is relationships. Everything's relying on other people, and leadership is getting other people to follow and implement your vision. So I've had lots of reluctant leaders that people want to follow them, but for whatever reason, they don't want to lead a team. They don't want to lead more people. And I got a really good friend. We were digging in to his business. And one of the reasons he was a reluctant leader was his parents had a business. And when he was 13, they had to lay a lot of people off because they had financial hardship. And that was a big imprint in his childhood that caused him to not want to be responsible for other people's livelihood. And it wasn't until we dealt with that limiting belief, and now he's got a great thriving team and done very well. So I think that there's just so much wrapped up in that.
I think the challenge for you though really is trying to get that across. I think we talked about this earlier, but trying to get that across, but that's the root of the problem. But you've almost got to kind of ease yourself into that by it's a bit like any sort of doctor or professional person where you say, well, you know, first of all, you got to get to the surgery, you know, it's like,
right. Well, and you know, I think surgeons are a great example of the highest level of consultation and sales is they're not going to prescribe something that isn't going to deal with the root issue.
Yeah.
But in my role, people want, usually they come to me, they think they need help with their marketing. They need more leads. That's the siren song of every business owner. And so I can't come in and just go directly at, oh, well, tell me about your childhood and did your family own any business and anything like that? Because they're like, yes. Why are we going there? I need help with this Facebook funnel or this mailer or whatever. Our email autoresponder is broke or marketing automation's not there. So I can't come in heavy-handed and go right to the mindset stuff. And also, it's kind of like I have to beat around the bush a bit because I joke with one of my long-term clients. She delayed getting something implemented for 3 or 4 months. And then when she finally got it done, it was a huge outcome. And she jokingly said, why didn't you tell me to do this sooner? And like I had written the copy, I had followed up with her 2 or 3 times to do it. She just, the holidays came, it fell through the cracks. And I replied, I said, I can only crack the whip so hard before you bleed and I have to leave. And that's, so it's definitely a balancing act for somebody in my spot.
And you're right, because then I think that's the difference between what you do and what these sort of self-help tutorials or online video courses are, because what they're doing is just saying, here's a formula, but you know, it has no relevance because what I'm going to do, I'm just going to read the bits that I want to read. So I think I need more sales leads. What's actually broken is my marketing message, the way I deal with my customers, pre-sales and post-sales.
Fulfillment, my onboarding. I know that if I sell more, this is a common problem with companies in the 1 to 3 million range is the onboarding of fulfillment is broken. They don't have a clear path. And so the owner knows in the back of their mind that if they close more, that's going to fall on their shoulders to have to fix anyway. So throttle it. And so I think you're right. And I think the course, there was a great post the other day. Somebody asked a bunch of gurus, why do people not finish courses they purchase? And the biggest reason I've seen over the years is that the course or solution or program doesn't actually solve or give them the exact outcome they're hoping for. And so they get into it and they realize, oh gosh, I've got 40 hours of reading, watching, notes, implementation, and 3 or 4 hours in, I'm not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel on this. And so they give up. And so I think that's where the caveat emptor, buyer beware, whatever that, because the marketers create all these programs and sell them well and get people into a frenzy, I think there's, I don't want to create oversight and say, oh, the government needs to regulate this per se, but I think there's a lot of programs out there that are sold that have no hope in solving somebody's actual problem. And so there's a lot of ignorance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 90% of the problem is solved by virtue of me writing a check. Because then I think, okay, so I bought this course, so I'm, you know, that's, it doesn't solve anything. All I'm doing is it's like trying to buy fitness.
Right, exactly, right. I paid for the lifetime membership to the gym. I feel better doing that.
Yeah, but, so I'm going to do it one day. So, and...
Right. Or every New Year's when I feel bad and, oh, I've got this lifetime membership to this gym I haven't been to in 300 days. Right.
Yeah, it works out. It costs me
a lot of psychology just paying, feeling like you're accomplishing something.
Yeah, because that's something that you're in control of. Mm-hmm. So I'm in control of paying for this course. And now I have the course, it's sitting there, and I will go through it in the time, and then I'll read some of it, and it won't resonate because it's actually probably too truthful.
Mm, that's another one too, right?
But these are all bottlenecks. So what we're doing is, these are points of constriction. So, and the great thing about your book is it does identify them. And clearly what you're doing is you're leveraging your experience by saying, well, I could talk about mindset in chapter one, but by the time you got through page three, I'll have uncovered so many uncomfortable truths that the book, you know, Bottleneck Breakthrough will sit next to your other 200 books that you purchased that year on self-help.
Yeah. And I think for me, I don't care if somebody never gets to the mindset stuff. That's the icing on the cake, in my opinion. That's where the heavy lifting of becoming self-aware, self-improved, fixing the chinks in your armor. I think that's great. But if you take a couple steps and you make your business more stable and you provide more value to your clients, more stability to your employees, that's a win in my book. Because I think small business grows the world. So,
you're right. So the thing is, you're right. Let's not get too deep into the psychology. However, in order to be a successful business and to break through that ceiling, you have to learn to get out of your own way. I think so. One of the biggest things I took out of your book was that whole, the quote is not trying to reduce the problems that you have. It's trying to teach yourself to get better.
Yeah. Jim Rohn, he says, don't wish your problems were less, wish you were greater. That's one of the most haunting quotes I've ever read. I've got a document of about 180 pages of quotes I've collected over the last decade plus. And that's definitely one of the top that is always, always useful.
Because I think from a business owner's perspective, you get to the point where you just think, I've tried everything. I'm running out of
capital. I mean, that's the classic line. Oh, we've tried it all. We've done it all. Oh, AdWords doesn't work for our company. Oh, XYZ.
Yes.
Whatever. I mean, and that's every business owner says that all the time, 100% of the cases. And so it's just walking through where they took the misstep, because AdWords, and I'm not saying everybody needs to do AdWords, but people that try AdWords and say it doesn't work, I mean, they're generating $40 billion a year in revenue off of that. It's working for quite a few people.
Yeah.
Probably just took a misstep. Or I can't find a worthwhile assistant. They're all flaky. Well, you're probably just not communicating effectively, or you have unreasonable, what I call common sense-itis, that you think everything that you would do is common sense. So that's just you're expecting him to read your mind.
Yes.
So it's just walking through all of that stuff.
And the sort of experience that you got working with people like Chet Holmes and Tony Robbins, I mean, did that really just propel you right into the center of these businesses where you could see, where you had this amazing vantage point?
That's it. I mean, I just, the bottleneck matrix that I came up with, it's on page 6 in the book. It walks through the revenue plateau and the most common bottleneck at that stage. That came out of talking to so many business owners that were wanting to work with Chet and just seeing patterns. Just it reminds me, I worked in a prior life, it seems, I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. So I worked in an ER for a couple of years. And there was a doctor there that went to med school in Guadalajara, Mexico. It's very common for people with mediocre scores in undergrad to go to overseas, Mexico or the Bahamas, to go to med school and then come back. And so he told me that one of the challenges was they would send him to a little fishing village every weekend and do checkups. And when he first started, he says, well, what am I looking for? They said, just do a checkup, listen to their lungs, listen to their heart, do their blood pressure, look at their breathing and sinus and whatever. And he says, well, what am I looking for? They said, just do it. Well, sure enough, the very first weekend, he's checking up hundreds of people, kids all the way to the elderly. And all of a sudden, one old man, his heart sounded completely different than everybody else. And he didn't know what was wrong, but he knew something was wrong. And they went and the guy had an arrhythmia and needed treatment, and whether it was a pacemaker or whatnot. But it was the reps, it was the repetitions of having enough data come by of what normal was. And so I was grateful for that experience working with him, because it helped me see that when I was working with Chet and doing a lot of phone calls and prospecting and taking in inquiries of companies, and I was the qualifier, I would go through and see, is there a deal here or not? And talk with enough companies, I could see those patterns and see those commonalities. And I just thought this was common sense as I was going through it. But when I started sharing these revenue plateaus with my clients, and saying what the bottleneck is, and they felt like I was reading their mail because they had been dealing at this revenue plateau for a while, and this was the solution that they had never thought of. And none of it's revolutionary, in my opinion. None of it's like going to get written up by McKinsey or Harvard Business or anything like that, but it's fiercely practical and it works consistently. So that was the pattern. That's what the benefit I got of working with Chet and Tony and Jay Abraham and Dan Kennedy and all those guys was immersion in high volume of businesses.
And do you find that if you were, a simple question, if you were to ask all of the businesses that you work with, a very simple question, which is, what do you guys do? How many businesses are able to articulate concisely and succinctly what their business is, why they're different, and why you should buy from them? Would you find that just something as basic as that has been lost
I think that's the first step in why we start with strategy and getting their big idea and then testimonials, because those are the raw material of how to differentiate. I think so many businesses, like I had a civil engineering client, they do roadways, they do waterways, they do land development. And so they know what they do because they're all professionals and went to school and got certified to do that work. But for them, it was really difficult to come up with the reasons why they were different than the other civil engineering firms. Mm-hmm. And the biggest one I found was they help small municipalities, little tiny towns, write for grant money that the federal and the state at the state level that provide new infrastructure that the city budget wouldn't afford. And they just thought, oh, well, I thought everybody did this. Well, they were very unique in that as a civil engineering firm. And so that allowed them to get more municipal clients because they could show, look, yes, you have a $350,000 whatever budget a year for improvements. We can get an extra couple million from the feds or the state. And here's our track record. And they had done over $30 million of federal projects that grant money that they had secured for clients over the years. So
They just didn't mention that in any of their
communications. No.
Yeah. And again, I think that there are so many businesses that we all come across where just simple things like that, where you think, well, I don't need to worry about that because I'm too busy solving big problems here.
Right. No, and it's just, it's the noise. There's, as a business owner, there's endless amounts of white noise distractions, demands on your time. And it is heavy lifting to step back and think through this stuff objectively. And I think we're wired for relationships. I am a very external processor. I am very extroverted by nature. And even my own stuff, I can't solve my own bottlenecks just thinking about them. 9 times out of 10, I have to chat with my wife about it. And she's just a sounding board, and she has great insights. But I've even had cases where when I was building something for a funnel or an application, I'd have a friend and I'd get on a call and I'd just talk at them and they would say nothing.
Yeah.
Just talking at them through the system was useful.
Yes.
To find the bottlenecks and find the things to fix and work on. So I think we're wired for relationships, even the most introverted.
And I think is that a problem that you find? So even the most simple things like, what is your message? How do you compete? These are absolute business basics 101.
101.
What problem are you solving? How are you different to your competition? How are you going to make money? How are you going to distribute your product?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm doing some work with a guy named Perry Marshall right now. And he has really latched on to Richard Koch's 80-20 principle. And Richard's a good friend of Perry's. And we're looking at companies for some equity investment stuff. And the analysis that Richard's given us of, well, are they a price simplifier or a proposition simplifier? That's a big factor for him, is how are they differentiating even not just their messaging, but how they do business from their competition. Very blue ocean strategy, per se, which is another great book I love and reference in my book. But yeah, there's just so many people, and Perry and I talk about this, and he's got a big following of around marketing and automation and AdWords. And he's a huge believer in autoresponders, just basic email autoresponders. And we were talking about an offer he did for some of his subscribers, and they did an audit to help them get their autoresponders optimized. And he said, I think it was like 81 or 82% of the people didn't even have one set up. And these are people that are paying him for advice, paying him for his newsletter, getting his message month in and month out, and they're still not doing the 101 level implementation.
But why is that? These are intelligent, capable people.
I think it's the, and this is borrowing another label from a guy named Alex Scharfen, who I appreciate his entrepreneurial personality type label, is that it's the classic ADD. It's the classic need for stimulation, need for innovation, need for momentum, as he calls it. And I think that they get bored with seeing things through.
Yeah.
And if you look at the DISC profile or any other personality type profile, the classic entrepreneur is very low on follow through. And they're usually quick starts. They like ideas. They like new things. They need variety. And I tell all of my clients that once I start seeing them not following through and they bring a lot of new ideas and they dump them on their staff's desk and they're not, and they're using it out of a need for variety, I tell them, stop this, go get a hobby for your variety. Your business needs to be more stable, more follow through, more implementation focused, because you've gotten to a certain level of revenue that's profitable. You've got more money than you need right now in your life for your quality of lifestyle, but you're sabotaging everything and you're making your staff go crazy by all this new ideation and need for variety.
So, and do you think is that a common problem with entrepreneurs where once the idea has become successful, okay, I've proved that I can do it. I'm bored now. I want to move on to something else.
Yeah.
Is that one of the things that sort of prevents them, because they don't actually really want to get through that $1 million ceiling because...
Right. Or 3 million or 5 million or 10 million, whatever it is that, I mean, there's so many cases I've got where they hit that ceiling and they're like, it's just too painful to look inside to deal with it. So I'd rather go do something else and be distracted and start another business, start a some hobby business, whatever, or just use this business as an incubator to throw mud against the wall and see what sticks. And it just becomes this very chaotic state because they're now bored with the success.
You fall out of love with your business, don't you?
Because
it's the girlfriend thing. So, you know, you're courting, and then
the mistress.
As the relationship, yep. Yeah, exactly. And as the relationship develops, then you know, the grass is always greener. But the issue there is that you might have an incredibly successful business. Mm-hmm. And it's part of your role to actually show the real value of what this guy has, or this woman has.
Well, yeah. And I think it's then assessing, do we grow it or do we optimize it? And I talk about a good friend of mine in the book, Dale Rainey, that he had a dry goods brokerage. His dad had a grocery store, and Dale started buying and selling dry goods, and they had a surplus. So he'd find other grocery stores in the area, and he got it to a cash cow basis that it really took a half a day a week to manage.
Yep.
And he now manages it from 1,000 miles away. He moved to a beautiful place in Idaho. It's still in Central California. And it's been running profitably for the last 15 years with very little oversight. And so he got that to a cash cow basis, and then has other things that cash flow provides opportunity for to keep stimulating. He's got a couple other businesses that some have failed, some have done well, but he has that foundation, and it's choosing the goal, right? Saying from the beginning, where are we headed? What's the objective? If it's to continue to grow profits because we want to get to some multiple, or we know it at a certain level, we're going to have excess capital. That's great. Or is it that we're making enough? We just need to figure out how to get more time freedom or more streamlined quality control so that it's more stable.
I think it's that the fulfillment element is critical, isn't it? So, mm-hmm. So how do you come along and say, okay, I know that there are all these things that I can see because of your background and because of your history and all the experience you have. And what sort of response do you get from your typical client who's been in this dark room, metaphorically speaking, and you then start showing them, you know, glimpses of the of chinks of light and faint signals from the future? So what is the sort of the normal responses that you get?
Yeah, it's bipolar. So it's either, oh, thank you. Oh, I've wondered, but I haven't been able to pinpoint that. Like, and that's the bottleneck matrix, like saying, okay, you're right at a million, you need an operations manager. And I don't think any of these people are going to be it. So let's develop somebody. And they say, oh, I couldn't put my finger on it, but thank you. And then the other side is, I don't want to deal with that. Let's go over here. I'm more interested over here.
But I think, in fairness, I would say the ratio in my experience is it's not 50-50. I mean, there are far more people. So I don't know what it's going to be, but you know, there are far more people that appreciate the insight and the perspective that you show.
I'd still say it's probably 65-35. That 35% of business owners, even when I just shine a flashlight over somewhere, they're like, I don't want to deal with that. That's my brother's kid and I can't handle that. Or oh, I can't look at that. I put so much money into it. I'm afraid to kill it or whatever. I mean, it's just, and that's fine. I don't have to die on that sword of.
Of course, but the real success story. So, when, you know, it's a case of working with the willing, as it were. So once you've.
That's it. 100% of the time. I mean, all of my biggest successes with clients have come out of business owners who said, do whatever you want. I lay myself bare.
Those are the successful guys who appreciate that they've actually reached some sort of threshold that they can't get over. So it doesn't matter how much introspection they do, no matter how many books they read, they still need someone like you to show them what they couldn't see, show them that little space beyond the veil.
And that's it. And it's not saying that I'm supposed to run, that I'm better at running their company or anything. That's not my goal. I'm not in the job, in the business of taking over people's companies. The goal is that I can help them change course, tweak something, reconfigure something that opens up a new wave of growth.
And the problem is the descriptive words, consultant, coach, don't do what you do. They don't do it justice because...
No, I get bastardized for sure. I mean, there's a lot of abuse out there, and there's a lot of unscrupulous providers that I have no problem calling them out when I see them.
Yes. So. But I mean, I think that's one of the challenges, really. Just I guess for people, or for you particularly, because
that's why I wrote the book. Was it really nobody's going on Google and saying, I need somebody to come fix all of my shortcomings in running my company. Like, that's just not a search. They're looking for Facebook ads. They're looking for traffic. They're looking for maybe project management help. But at the end of the day, business owners are trying to solve a problem that's right in their face, and they don't realize it's just a surface level thing. And so that was part of why I wrote the book. Was my wife challenged me to it, was just to get this stuff out of my head. And when people say, well, what do you do? I could just say, here, read this. If it's of interest, I'm happy to talk.
But some of the impacts that you've had on people have been fairly monumental, because in your book, the preface is written by one of your clients whose life clearly you completely changed. So there,
I didn't know that until he wrote that. So I knew that he had had growth, and he had thanked me, and we've built a great friendship. He's in my fantasy football league. I mean, he's a good friend now, but I did not realize he was in such a dark space right before we started working together.
But
that means the world. Like, to me, there's nothing more valuable than improving somebody's personal life and their relationships.
Yeah. And I think that there are a lot of people that I know, maybe some are listening to this, where you think, well, I just, you know, I can feel it, but I know that I'm doing something wrong. I know I've got the ability to do it right. Where do I get, it's not help. You don't need help in the sense that, you know, it's a disaster. I need some smart guy to come along and say, look, you know, give me some, I need two brains rather than one, because clearly, you know, this brain is not enough because I can't see around the corners. So,
right. And I think it's just perspective. It's just more perspective. I was advising a guy last week. He's looking to expand into a new market with a new office location. And he was concerned about his employee contract, and he was concerned about reception in the marketplace. And I just had two perspectives that took 5 minutes to talk through both. And he didn't have to worry about the employee contract stuff and all the do not compete and all that stuff that's pointless. No state backs him up anyway. And he solves it with so many other ways with his fulfillment and team. And then the market penetration side, it was just being even more aggressive in one little area. And 10 minutes is literally all it took to get through those two points that he was mulling over for weeks on end. And actually, in my opinion, was going down a path that probably would have caused more problems than solved, especially if he had gotten that contract implemented that was so onerous and really restrictive and would, it's like having an aggressive prenup, right? What, right at the beginning of a marriage. I mean, it just overly aggressive prenup that is all stacked in your favor. And it's like, well, wait, what's the point of this relationship?
And it's funny because, I mean, coming back to the beginning where we were talking about your ability to double a business in 90 days. The fact is, it's not you that's doubling the business.
No, I'm just helping show them the more efficient path.
I mean, it's that, I mean, that's the critical thing with all of the things that you're doing. You're not running their business. You're not telling them what to do. You're just unlocking their own ability. You're is this right? Is it mainly just that you're unlocking?
There are, so it's a catch-22 in a sense that I'm not running their business, but some of the ideas I do come up with, they would have never come up with on their own. And that's a challenge. Like, that's the hard part of wanting to empower them to feel equipped to be making more strategic decisions. But like one of the clients, we were talking through their pricing model, and it wasn't until an hour into the call, I just had a light bulb idea. And I asked a very simple question about their pricing. It was for an ongoing project, and we shifted $500 towards the front from the back, and it freed up a ton of cash flow.
Yeah.
And again, that just, they would have never thought about it. It never, in the 12-year history of their company, had never come up. And it was just a random spark in my head an hour into a very, for them, was a very frustrating call, because they didn't want to talk about their finances and their pricing model and all that stuff. But it produced a ton of fruit.
And I think, you know, people need to appreciate that as well, is that what you have is a particular skill, which is the ability to see components of a business for what they are, dispassionately from a different...
Well, that's it, right? Without the emotion, without the judgment, without calling their baby ugly. I think that's something that a lot of people feel squeamish about revealing to others, is they think they're going to get judged. They think they're going to be made out to be a fraud. I mean, I think that's everybody's biggest fear at the end of the day, is that they're not good enough. And
but you also have, but you have the technical background, you have the experience, the strategic insight to be able to say, well, now I can see these components, as you were talking about earlier, try this because that works, this doesn't work. And so it's not just the typical consultant joke, which is where, you know, you borrow someone's watch and you charge them to tell the time. What you're bringing is real third-party perspective and insight, backed up by years of working with some of the best, most talented marketers where you've seen things working. So if one of your clients says to you, you know, this will never work, you can say, well, in this experience, it does work. You know, you need.
Well, then the fun thing I say is half the time when they say this will never work, I'll say, I'll bet you. And we put some money on the line, and that's a good shift for business owners too, is, or they say, I don't like this copy, or I don't like this color, I don't like this design. I'm like, well, let's just split test it.
Yes, exactly.
It doesn't, this is, nothing is in stone. We're not chiseling the 10 commandments here.
Yeah.
So it's all flexible. And if they get really obstinate, then I'll say, I'll bet you $100. I'm right. Let's put your money where your mouth is. And I mean, it's peanuts in the scheme of the fee they're paying me or the, what we're implementing on, but it's a good pattern interrupt.
Yes. And from your personal perspective, I mean, where is your bottleneck? Is there forgive me for, you know, I don't mean to dive into
No, it's okay.
But just, you know, is there a point where you go, well, I see all these things that I can do. How do I get this message out to people? I mean, obviously there's the book, but are there other things that you're building? Because if you can distill the message into steps, and the more data we have about people, which is much more available now, the more possible it is to provide them with a pathway that if they take that pathway in your absence, they'll get outcomes.
Yeah. And I think the book really is the first step. I'm doing an 8-week implementation course for people that bought the book for free. I don't know what I'll charge for it on the back end. It'll be very nominal because I'm not looking to make some high ticket thing that I retire to Maui with. I think that course may be helpful. I don't know. I taught at university for a few years. I really enjoyed that. I don't know if I'd go back or become a guest lecturer somewhere. I think the challenge really is that in the world of business help and personal development, there's a lot of soft, fuzzy stuff that gets consumed like candy, right? Yeah. It's the quick sugar rush. And I'm not going to disparage anybody that is creating that stuff, because I think their intentions are good. And I think they are creating useful stuff for the world, but it's not significant in my opinion of helping businesses solve this stuff. And I realize, like, that's the hurdle I get to overcome with this message and with this framework, is how do I promote it in a way that makes it more visible, but without watering it down and making it the new shiny that everybody gets excited about, but fails to follow through on.
And do you have people that work with you in the same way that you work with other people? Do you have mentors? And
it's interesting. The one that's produced the most fruit, actually, he wrote part of the last chapter on mindset. He's my mindset coach, Justin Fairman, and best investment I've ever made in my own development and growth and business experience. And I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on courses and training and coaching over the years, but spending it with Justin really healed my limiting beliefs, so to speak, and really got my mindset to a spot that I feel so much more capable and stable and willing to take on the world. And I think that's the most valuable investment anybody can make, is in getting their head right.
No, I agree. I completely agree. And I mean, and
one funny one, I was telling a buddy of mine about it and he was shocked at the fee. And my wife was there. We were at a barbecue at their house and she said she was pissed. She told my friend this. She said she was pissed when I started working with Justin because of what I was investing. But within the first month, she was like, "So when's your next meeting with Justin?" Because they were paying off, and yes. Even in our marriage. And
yes, I, household, you know, and Joshua, I don't recognize you. Please, you know, you want this is obviously having you know, benefits. But I mean, you're right. And that's the one thing. I think the smart people realize that you've got limitations. And on the flip side, you have the ability to do great things, but there are limitations that hold you back. And those could be petty limitations. But
anything. And the reality is, majority of them get imprinted in us when we're children, when we have no control over our existence, when we did not choose the parents or the family that we came into this world to experience. And so there's really no judgment of it. It's just, are you willing to deal with it? And it's painful stuff. Like, I've had some pretty sobbing moments going through this stuff. And there's been times where I felt like things were being pulled out of me, and for months on end, it was causing turmoil internally until it was plucked out. That's the only way I could describe it at times. But so it's not fun stuff, but to me, it's worth all the gold in the world.
But the flip side is that what you're able to do is, as you say, your book is a demonstration. You don't leave with that. It's, look, let's park that for the moment. We'll deal with that later, but let's deal with the now. So let's look at, you know, this issue. How are you articulating your message? How are you getting leads? What are you doing with them? And then you get out.
What are your expectations for your staff? How are you not communicating those expectations, which leads to all manner of disappointment, right? Unstated expectations is the leading source of disappointment and or unmet expectations. And most of those expectations are unstated. So those are very practical things.
And your testament to the fact that the results are tangible. And I know, because I've been through these processes before where you're very skeptical from the outset. But, you know, people with your skills and your abilities do bring incredible value. And it's a very tangible, immediate value. And then do you find that your clients end up being long-term clients where, you know, it's not just a short...
It's a split. I have a very, I don't remember in statistics, the mean, median, or average, but I have like two medians. I have clients that work with me forever or clients that work with me for 3 to 6 months. And 3 to 6 months is one of two reasons. Either their business just has a cap and we can't continue growing it and we solve the bottleneck and fixed and it's great. Or we get and I just keep running into wall after wall after wall on implementation, and they decide, nah, I really don't want to deal with this stuff. And so we part ways there as well. But the majority of them are long term. And it's just the nature of my personality and the types of businesses I like working with. So it's the onion, right? There's just the next layer and the next layer and the next layer. And the fun part is, a lot of people said, you sure give away a lot of good insight in the book. And really, to me, the book is all the 101 level stuff. It's not that I don't share some really useful nuggets, but I want people implementing that and getting results and then coming to me, because then I can really put the throttle down.
Yes. Like
it's fine. I'm happy to coach your team on how to project manage and how to communicate more effectively, or get them a course on copywriting so that they know the basics of...
Yes.
What's in it for me from the perspective of the reader. But I love it in the cases when all of that's already done and we're tackling really big strategic stuff.
Brilliant. So it must be a very exciting life to sort of have all these new challenges. Well, you know, here's a new problem.
There's my variability, right? Yes. My variety that I need for lots of simulation. So I get it working with 5 or 6 companies at a time. The joke is, if I had only one company of my own and I was fulfilling non other business problems, but just selling widgets or selling off the shelf, I could see how that could be very boring too. So I get it. That's why I understand the need for my clients' variety. And some of them are actually jealous of me from all the variety in projects. And sometimes I tell them about other projects or client challenges that I see, and it gives them a voyeur's perspective into other business.
And the great thing is, it's a very virtuous circle, because the more businesses you see,
very much,
the more you speak to, the more experience you get, and the more you can again, it's your surgeon.
And even the more they cross pollinate. Like, I don't do a networking type thing with my clients, but I'm happy to introduce them if it makes sense. And it's always fruitful when that happens.
That's fabulous. Good. Well, Joshua, it's now time to move on to the questionnaire of questionnaires, which I borrowed from James Lipton. As you know, all great things are borrowed from pure genius. So my 10 questions begin with, Joshua Long, what is your favorite word?
Flow.
What is your least favorite word?
Can't.
What are you most excited about right now?
Really, my book.
And what turns you off right now?
Politics.
Notice my silence at that point, but I think there are others in agreement with you. What sound or noise do you love?
Led Zeppelin.
Ah, never had that one before. Completely in agreement with you. What sound or noise do you hate?
Barking dogs.
What is your favorite curse word?
There's so many useful ones, but I always go back to fucking A.
Oh, that's brilliant. So that is a development of fuck, which is, you know, again, the world's favorite word. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
There's no money in it, but a woodworking craftsman.
And what profession would you not like to attempt?
A dairyman.
So we like getting up early in the morning.
Oh, married to cows. You can never leave. Oh,
I know.
Those guys.
Hats off to the dairyman.
Oh, man.
I don't think I have a big dairyman audience, but if you're out there, we appreciate it.
Lots of respect.
My final question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I think, great job. Now take a look at this.
Oh, brilliant. Fantastic. The next big mission. Yeah, life is just training. Yes.
This is something fun. Right.
How do people get in touch with you? How do they find out about your book, Bottleneck Breakthrough? How do they buy it? How do they get hold of you? How do they find out more about what you're doing?
Book is on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's Kindle and Nook and iBooks. So just about everywhere you need to find it. The website, bottleneckbreakthrough.com, is where I have all the stuff around my business. Facebook and LinkedIn, I'm active on. Not as much on Twitter, some on Instagram. You'll mostly see pictures of my kids on Instagram.
That's fabulous. That's great. So I'll make sure that all of those connection points are in the notes. But Josh, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, Matthew. And I hope this was useful. I felt like it was a huge pitch for me, but I hope that what I shared is useful for your audience and that they get some insights that help them grow their business.
No, it is. And you know, it wasn't a pitch. I think what you do is incredibly valuable. And I just wish that more people, particularly those guys running businesses, just take the initiative and contact people that have your specific skills, because.
Yeah. We're in the business of supporting and helping business owners achieve their ultimate objective. So that I think in the healthiest sense, we make all of that better off. And obviously there's a lot of knuckleheads out there trying to make money doing this too.
Exactly. So I have to declare that I'm now an owner of a free electronic copy of your book, which I will be going through page after page. So, you know, thank you once again.
Great, Matthew. Have a great day.